The Shoresham Podcast, shining a light to the nations.
Hello, everyone. I'm Bill Cloud, and you're watching Returning to Our Roots. We want to thank you for joining us today. I do hope and trust that you've been joining us every program, because, as always, we tend to build in this week's program on the previous program. And today's no different. We are discussing the topic of keeping the commands. And for some, we're addressing something that it goes against everything you've been told. Most of us were told, as believers in Messiah, we have no obligation or responsibility to keep any of the commandments that were written in the Law of Moses. Or we have picked which ones we think are for us, and we've chosen to ignore others. And so what we've been trying to demonstrate scripturally, not just from the quote-unquote Old Testament, but from the New Testament as well, that is really not what the Bible teaches us. It teaches that we are to be obedient to the Father. We are to keep His instructions. But because there are so many preconceived ideas that have come to us through the years, a lot of people read into that statement that I just made that I'm saying that you're justified before God by doing these things or not doing those. And as you've been keeping up, if you've been keeping up with me, you know that's not what we're saying. We're not saying that you keep the commands in order to be saved. We're saying you keep the commands because you are saved. Now, last program, we talked about bondage as opposed to liberty, and James's writings about the perfect law of liberty, and not just being a hearer of the word, but being a doer of the word. And which commandments do we keep? Let me say this. To try to grasp the Torah and the commandments and try to apply all these things to our life without the Messiah, without coming to the Messiah first, would be like trying to take the volume of water and try to hold that in your hands without having a cup. And if you try to hold the volume of water and you don't have a cup, what's going to happen? You're going to make a mess. So what must we do first? First, we get the cup. And so we'll liken the cup to the Messiah. We have to come to the Messiah first. We come into the relationship first. But now that we have the relationship, or if you will, the cup, now we can take the water and we can fill the cup up. As a matter of fact, that's what Messiah said. I have come not to negate the Torah of the prophets, but to fulfill, to make them full of meaning, to fill it up, to make it possible for me to take the volume and to put it in something that's useful and that's not going to make a mess. In other words, as we approach this, if you embrace the idea that God's commandments are for all His people because we have come into this relationship through the Messiah, then we have to strike a balance. There has to be balance in how we appropriate these things into our lives. We have to have that balance. Now, in John chapter 4, verse 23, I want you to look at something the Messiah said. You're very familiar with this, but He says, "The hour is coming, and now is, when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth. For the Father is seeking such to worship Him. God is spirit, and those who worship Him must worship in spirit and truth." So the true worshipers don't pick and choose. They don't go with spirit or they don't go with just truth. It's spirit and truth. I say that because, and this is my opinion, many Christians emphasize the spirit part of it and neglect a lot of the truth side of it. On the other hand, Judaism tends to emphasize the truth part of it and ignores a lot of the spirit part of it. And so when Christianity ignores a lot of the truth, and by that I mean what Moses wrote, what the prophets have written, Psalm 119 says, "Your Torah is truth." When Christians ignore what Moses wrote, you know what that does? That causes Judaism to look disparagingly on the Messiah. Because from their point of view, they can't believe Yeshua's Messiah if He would teach His followers that you don't have to do what Moses wrote. But on the other hand, because Judaism emphasizes the truth side of it And sometimes without the spirit part of it, that causes Christianity to look disparagingly on the Torah. And what I guess I'm trying to say is this. From a religious point of view, both Christianity and Judaism, both of them are approaching the Creator from different perspectives and arriving at different conclusions. And in the end, both are right about some things and both are wrong about some things. And so the Messiah is saying, in a manner of speaking, we need to take what this group over here sees that's correct, and we need to take what this group sees over here that is correct, and we need to come together and bring what is right in on both sides of this, spirit and truth, and put it together as one, because that's what the Father is looking for. In other words, man's approach to the Creator and man's philosophies that become religious dictates and dogma and doctrines that have the tendency to add to and to take away from what God said, when you put God in that box, you end up in religion, and that's not what God's looking for. God's looking for people who are coming to Him in a relationship. And because they are in that relationship, they want to worship Him. They want to follow Him. And He says they're going to need spirit and truth. Because when we take these two together and we have that kind of balance, that acts as not only a rudder to navigate through life, but it also acts as an anchor to keep us on course and to keep us stable. You know, when you get an ear infection, you can't stand up straight. You lose your equilibrium. And here's why. Because inside your ear is the center of balance. And notice it's inside your ear. It's not behind your eye. It's not up your nose. It's not in your mouth. It's in your ear. And I think that's very important, because faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the Word of God. But we're not just to be hearers of the Word, but we're to be doers of the Word. In other words, faith, you put legs on your faith by doing what the Creator has said to do. But you must first hear what the Creator said to do. But if your hearing is impaired, if you get an ear infection, then you can't put legs on it because you're out of balance. You're off kilter. And so I guess I'm saying is this: if you put too much emphasis on truth at the expense of spirit, or too much emphasis on the spirit at the expense of truth, either way you lean, the end result's going to be the same. You're going to be off balance. And when you get that impairment to your ear and you can't stand up straight, you can't walk straight, you kind of swagger around like a drunkard, how are you going to be able to navigate a straight and narrow path, the only way that leads to life? So again, all of this is to say, we need to hear what the Messiah is saying. We need to hear what the Father is saying. And we need to do what the Father is saying. We need that balance. You know, years ago I did a teaching on the Titanic, and I'm going to kind of condense it down into a few statements. But here's what destroyed the Titanic. Yeah, pride created an environment whereby the Titanic sails into destruction. But in the end, technically speaking, the reason the Titanic sank was because the rudder and the engines were out of parity. There was no balance. In other words, the engines had too much horsepower for the rudder to handle. The rudder was too small. There was not that balance that was needed between the two. And so if we've got a lot of zeal, a lot of spirit, horsepower, engines, if you will, but we didn't balance it with the proper rudder, truth, God's instructions, then when we see obstacles in our way, an iceberg, guess what? We're going to hit, because that zeal is going to propel us into that obstacle. And if the rudder is not big enough, if the truth is an imbalance with the spirit, then we're going to have troubles, and vice versa. If there's not enough horsepower and the rudder's too big, it's still the same result. So again, regardless of which way we lean, the end result is the same if we're out of balance. And so we must be those who who worship Him in spirit and in truth. We must have the balance that comes through coming to the Messiah, coming to the Father through the Messiah, coming into the relationship and understanding our justification before the Creator is because we place our trust in the blood of the Lamb. We place our trust and confidence in Him. But then, to balance that out, we now do what He said to do as demonstration to Him and to the rest of the world that we do have that faith, that we are of that faith. Now, if you study church history, you will see that early church fathers took away a lot of things from the Torah. That happened in the 4th century. They took things away, for instance, certain holy days, and they replaced them with other holidays. And you're welcome to do the investigation into this. Christmas, Easter, things like that were the early church fathers in the 4th century's way of replacing those things that they concluded did no longer pertain to believers. And they based this authority on when Messiah says that we are given the keys to the kingdom. And they interpreted that to mean that we are given the authority to make changes. And of course, Protestants followed suit in that. Here's why I'm bringing that up. Does Christianity have the authority to change God's laws? Does anyone have the authority to change God's laws? And particularly when we understand that Hebrews says the Messiah is the same yesterday, today, and forever. The Creator says through the prophet that I am the Lord, I change not. So I'm just posing that question to you. Does man, Christian, Jew, what have you, does man have the authority to change God's laws? And my answer to that question is no, I do not believe he does. As a matter of fact, this idea that because the church was given the keys to the kingdom, that is, from their interpretation, the authority to make changes, that is at the heart of replacement theology. That's the essence of replacement theology, because that mindset and that logic says this: Israel broke the covenant with God, and therefore God is through with Israel. He's done with them. And so the church has replaced Israel as God's elect. And so consequently, the covenant given to Israel is now null and void and of no consequence, has no authority, because Yeshua, the Messiah, has replaced it with the new covenant. So this idea that that Christianity was given the authority to change God's laws is the essence of what we call replacement theology. And I know that, I'm hoping anyway, that you watching this categorically deny and disagree with replacement theology. But you need to understand that the idea that we do not have to keep His instructions because that's all been done away with, that's been replaced, walks hand in hand with the concept that Israel has been replaced. Because that mentality says this: you have an old car and you use it for a long time and it gets you down the road. But then when it gets old and, you know, things are starting to, you know, wear out, you get rid of the old car, just junk it, take it to the junkyard, and you get a new one. Well, that's what we kind of do in the West. But the problem with that is the Creator says nothing about changing. He says, I don't change. In fact, what the Creator has always said from the beginning, and you can see this in Acts chapter 3, verse 21, is that from the beginning, God doesn't want to junk the old car, so to speak. He wants to restore it back to its proper condition. God's all about restoring things. It's the restoration of all things. God has never broken His covenants, even when man has. And so the logic of replacement theology is that we get rid of the old and replace it with the new. We get rid of Israel of old and we replace it with the church, the new. And so consequently, we get rid of the old covenant that was given to Israel and we replace it with the new covenant. God doesn't change. God restores. Have you ever seen a rainbow? Of course, everybody has. But if you've seen that rainbow, then what does that remind you of? When God placed a rainbow in the heavens, as a reminder that he would never again destroy the earth with the flood of waters. And so he put the rainbow in the heavens as a token, as a sign of the covenant that he made with the earth in the days of Noah. And this is long before the Messiah came on the scene. In other words, even though man has said that that covenant no longer exists, it's been replaced, apparently the Creator, every time we see a rainbow, is saying, no, those have not been done away with. He has not forsaken his covenant. He has not done away with those things. It's still in place. The point is, he doesn't change. He restores. Now, where Christianity tends to take away from what Moses wrote and replace it with other things, Judaism, on the other hand, has the tendency to add to what God says. And then in adding to, making that superior to, or at least equivalent to, what God said. And in either case, I believe the Creator tells us through his instructions that both are wrong. Look at what Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 2 says. Moses said, "You shall not add to the word which I command you, nor take from it, that you may keep the commandments of the Lord your God, which I command you." In other words, if you're going to keep the commands of the Lord your God, then you're not going to add to, you're not going to take away from it. Let me read from Deuteronomy 12, verse 32. "Whatever I command you, be careful to observe it. You shall not add to it, nor take away from it." And so there's at least two passages of Scripture that tell us, whether you're looking at it from Judaism side or from Christianity side, if you're adding to, that's wrong. If you're taking away from, that's wrong. And if your argument is, well, Messiah's come, all of that's passed away, all that's been replaced, well, that walks hand in hand with replacement theology. We are not authorized to add anything to his word or to take anything away from his word. And if we believe that the word, the Bible, from Genesis to Revelation, is the word of God, then who are we to say that this is no longer relevant or that no longer applies? As a matter of fact, Messiah chastened and rebuked those certain religious people of his day for adding to all the time. He talked about the fact that because they had done this, they had misled people. And I'm paraphrasing what the Messiah says in Matthew chapter 15, verses 1 through 6. But the point is, he rebuked them because of all the adding to, in direct contradiction to what Moses had said. So I said all of that to come to this point. If we are to attain balance, then it seems to me that as believers, we need to restore what has been taken away. And as we pursue him and his righteousness and seek to be obedient to his word, not only do we need to restore back the things that were taken away, but we need to take away the things that were added to. Whether it be man-made holidays or whether it be man-made customs that supersede or undermine what God had said, adding to and taking away was wrong. And if we're going to be true worshipers, to worship him in spirit and truth, then we need to be able to discern those things that were taken away and put them back, restore them. We need to be able to discern those things that were added to and then remove those things out of the way so that we can embrace his word. In the end, my main concern is not what the rabbinical sages have to say or the fathers of Judaism have to say. And quite frankly, my primary concern is not to understand what the early church fathers had to say either. My responsibility, my concern is to know what the Father says in his word, to understand what he wishes for me to do. Now, I say all of this because, once again, from a Christian point of view, at large, Christianity tends to question the legitimacy of the Torah because of the fact that Judaism, by and large, has added to Christianity, looks at the Torah as just legalism and just following the letter of the law. Well, and they'd look at that the Torah that way because Judaism has done that very thing. So this reinforces this idea that we don't have anything to do with Israel. We don't have anything to do with the Torah. And so those things are old and antiquated, and we shouldn't have any kind of thing to do with them. We just need to embrace the Messiah. And so as I was beginning to learn that, you know, His commandments are for all of His people. And we are now in this relationship with the Father through the Messiah, and we do have a responsibility to be obedient. And so as I was beginning to learn these things and discuss them with friends of ours, I remember I had a conversation with a very close friend of mine who was arguing that we don't have to do any of these things. And so he put it this way. He says, so, since Moses says that if you got it, and I'm, forgive me for being so blunt here, he says, so when you go to the bathroom, since Moses said this is what you're supposed to do, are you going to take a shovel with you when you go to the bathroom? In other words, all he could see was the letter of the law. All he could see was that just what's on the surface, but ignoring the principle that's contained in that letter. Because to put it in context, when Moses tells the people, here's how you do things, in this particular case, you go outside the camp and you take a shovel because you're going to make sure there's no uncleanness. One person only sees the letter of the law, while the Father's wanting us to see the principle contained in that law. Because you see, He was in their midst. He had them built a sanctuary so that He could dwell among them. And He's holy. He's set apart. He is clean. And so what was He trying to demonstrate to them? If I'm going to be in your midst, if I'm going to dwell among you, then there can't be any uncleanness in the camp. There can't be anything that defiles, because I, the Lord your God, I go through the camp. And when I go through the camp, I don't want to find anything that defiles. But not just in that physical sense, but moreover and more importantly, I don't want to see anything in you that defiles. And so spirit and truth balance tells us that yes, physically they had to go and remove any kind of uncleanness, but the spirit side of it is also saying, and in addition to that, make sure all the uncleanness that's in you is removed from the camp as well. Balance. And oh, by the way, if you ever find yourself in the wilderness where there are no bathrooms, the Torah tells you what to do. So we're wanting to understand the principle. We're going to look at the Torah as simply being letters and words and ritual. Or are we going to choose to look at it as something that, yes, tells us what to do and what not to do in a physical sense, but contained in there are the weightier matters, the spiritual principle. Now, just because we learned the spiritual principle doesn't mean that we are absolved from doing what He said to do physically. Or just because we do what He says to do physically doesn't mean that we're absolved from trying to understand what He's saying through these things spiritually. Just because we understand that the Messiah is the Word made flesh doesn't mean we throw away our Bibles. We still have a literal physical Bible that we read, that we study, that we try to internalize, and yet at the same time we understand that the Messiah is the fulfillment of it. He is the epitome of it. But you don't do away with one if you embrace the other. You embrace both. You embrace the truth and the spirit. You embrace the physical and the spiritual. You hear what He says, you do what He says. And in doing what He says, you learn what He's saying through these things. So, if you approach it from a religious perspective, from Judaism, they wanted to add to. From Christianity's point of view, they wanted to take away. And in the end, you know what you end up with? Religion. And religion says, do this, don't do that, and that's how you're going to be justified before God. But the Creator says, hear what I'm saying. Do what I say. And it may not be that it's in a formula. It may not be an A, B, C, D, E, F, that you can just go off a checklist. It might be, ladies and gentlemen, that if we are going to come to terms with the fact that as His people, we have an obligation to keep His word, and as we go to study that word, that we've got to let Him speak to us. Now, how will I know if I've got balance? How will I know that I'm approaching this, keeping the commands in the proper way? Here's a few thoughts that I have, and I'll leave you with this. When you believe God and His Word to the degree that you will not let others stop you from being obedient, I believe that's balance. When you're merciful to those who don't understand what you understand, I believe you're headed in the right direction. But if you're full of arrogance and impatient with people, I believe you've missed the point. When you see that the Torah does not lead you away from the Messiah, but actually to the Messiah, that's balance. Because what I've found out, folks, is I need a Redeemer more than ever before. I hope that you'll join us next week as we continue talking about His commandments and our responsibility to be obedient. Until then, shalom.
Like what you're hearing? Become a BuildCloud Premium Partner to watch or listen to hundreds of hours of teachings and resources on demand. Go to BuildCloud.com/subscribe to start watching today.